I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Mick Burson, a Waco native who's since migrated to Albuquerque to pursue a master's degree in painting. Mick is a muralist whose work can be found adorning buildings throughout the city, and once you see his style, you can't miss it. He recently finished a wall on the side of True Love Bar at 4th and Franklin, and he joins me to talk about the process, his evolution as an artist, and why Waco right now is a great place for creatives. But before you hear that interview, it's the word on the street. Last episode on Downtown Depot, I mentioned a guy named Jake Cockrell, a young Baylor grad who served as the manager of entrepreneurship and innovation for the Greater Waco Chamber. He stoked the entrepreneurial fire here in Waco for the last 2 years by helping lead 1 Million Cups and the Waco Young Professionals Organization. But now he's decided to take that knowledge and set off on his own.
You know, I'm extremely grateful for the time that I had at the Chamber, the people I met, the things that I learned, and the initiatives I got to be a part of. But ultimately, my wife and I's goal since graduating college and really kind of getting together has always been to be entrepreneurs out on our own, running our own businesses here in Waco and trying to make an impact doing so.
Jake and his wife, Sydney, run a local lifestyle website called Waco Bound and just started a new venture called Waco Pedal Company that offers group bike tours in downtown Waco on a tandem bike with seating for 12.
To do this right and to do it how we wanted and to ultimately move towards our goals, we needed to have at least one of us out there full time. And so we're taking the leap of faith and trying to stand it up.
The idea seems like a great way to cover a ton of downtown with your friends, and you can even amp up the ride by bringing your own alcohol. Jake and the team hope that they can contribute to the building energy of Waco after dark.
We really see a budding downtown nightlife that's kind of on the cusp of really kind of developing into something new and exciting. And so Pedal Tours is kind of hopefully one of the leaders in that with the other community members that's really kind of trying to push forward a more active nightlife, more excitement in the downtown corridor, keeping lights on, keeping people down there.
Find them online at wacopedaltours.com and check out the bike at its location in front of Waco Escape Rooms at 711 Washington Avenue. As a food truck owner, this one is near and dear to my heart. The Texas Food Truck Showdown is happening again in Waco this year for the fourth consecutive time, and the event just keeps on getting better. The showdown pits some of the best food trucks in the state against each other, and chefs with the winning dishes take home hardware and prize money. Last year, local favorite Club Sandwich won Best International Dish with his deep-fried tamale balls, and you know Young Day's whipping up something good for this year's version, too. Not only will there be fabulous food, but also a beer and wine garden, a kid zone, and live music and entertainment throughout the day, so there really is something for everyone. Now, the showdown isn't until March 17th, but I bring it up for two reasons. One, applications for vendors are due January 31st, so if you are a food truck owner wanting to make a name for yourself, get in touch with Ariel Tesh at the Waco Chamber. And two, this year's date will coincide with Magnolia's Spring at the Silos event, so you might want to start looking for parking this weekend. Visit magnoliamarket.com in the coming weeks for details about the 2018 Spring at the Silos, and check out the TexasFoodTruckShowdown.com for info about the Food Truck Festival. I'm now joined in the studio by Mick Burson. Mick is a working artist whose colorful murals you've seen in downtown every day when you drive through. He's here hanging out in Waco for a little bit. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Mick, tell me a little bit about your history in Waco.
I grew up in Waco. I was born in 1990, so I lived here for 20 years and moved to Denton, and now I live in Albuquerque.
And you were in Denton at UNT pursuing art.
Yeah, I went to UNT and got a bachelor's in painting. And now I'm at UNM getting a master's in painting.
The undergrad art program at UNT.
Yeah.
I know that Denton has a really thriving arts program as a city in general, but the school specifically very strong in music and in the visual arts. What takeaways do you have thinking back to your 4 years there in Denton?
Yeah. I didn't realize at the time, it's a really great school. And I was living in Waco, and this girl I was with was like, hey, I'm going to college. Do you want to go? I'll help you fill out forms. And I was like, well, not doing much here. So yeah, let's do it.
That's how we all ended up in college. It's our girlfriend or it's our mom.
Yeah, just kind of by accident. And I'm so glad. Like, oh, man. And looking back now that I go to UNM, I can compare the schools. And, I mean, they're both great schools. The UNT is, like, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing there. And Denton. Like, Denton's great.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the scene in Denton.
I guess, like everybody says, like it's different than when I used to live there, it feels like, even though it's just been 2 years or so. But I feel like there I transitioned into being able to, like, survive and provide for myself by painting. So I just painted walls and signs and stuff.
And how did you end up in New Mexico?
I don't know. Like, I was just like, okay, I'm going to go to grad school now. So then I was like, where would I like to live? And I was like, I guess New Mexico, because it's like, it's kind of far, kind of close. It's just like right over there. And so I just applied, and that was it.
So take me back to that conversation you were having with yourself, finishing at UNT and trying to decide what the next move was. How did you determine that grad school was the right move for you?
I have a mentor in town named Glenn Downing at MCC. So I talked to him a little bit about it, and I ultimately flipped a coin. And I was like, heads, I'm going to go, and tails, I'm not.
Literally?
Yeah, literally flipped a coin for the application to put it in. And so I did that, and yeah, worked out, and they accepted me. So
where are you if the coin had flipped on the other side?
I don't know. I live in a different town because I was ready to go from Denton, but I don't know. Not in Albuquerque, probably.
So now you are in Albuquerque, you're pursuing that master's in painting, yeah. And you're also teaching. What's that experience been like?
It's been crazy. I teach, and I taught drawing one for my first year, and then last semester I taught drawing two, and now I'm teaching painting one. And going into it, I just had no idea. I'd never taught, and they were like, hey, we need a syllabus, and here's 20 students. And I was like, what? Like, are you serious? And they were serious. And so you just kind of walk in there and you just kind of like fake it till you make it, you know? You just kind of like, okay, like, I mean, you do have stuff to teach and you do have stuff to, like, bring to the table, but it's just like believing in that situation where there's big money spent on your opinions and what you know.
You spent so much time in the classroom being taught to.
Yeah.
What do you think that you provide your students as an instructor?
I try to make it a little bit different than it was for me. I told them last semester, I'm like, hey, if you want an A, you can have an A. It's like, that's not what we're here for. And they ultimately all got A's. But I just wanted them to be there just because they wanted to be there and they wanted to learn and see what I could bring to the table. And so everybody gets A's, but I do have stuff to provide if they do want to show up to learn.
Mick Burson has painted all throughout Waco. He has some fresh paint up right now at Franklin and 4th on the sidewall of True Love Bar. Mick, what was the first work that you did in Waco?
It was a Skate World on Town Oaks.
I don't even know where that is.
It's not there anymore. I mean, like, Skate World's still there, but the wall's not there anymore.
Okay.
Or no, it was Skate Country out in Bellmead. That's what it was, I think. Yeah.
Is that the roller skating place?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the rink. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So I did Skate Country, and then I did Skate World, and yeah.
So what did you put up at Skate Country?
Oh, man. Probably something like, I mean, I do remember. It was like, I think it said Waco or something, and kind of like graffiti, like bad graffiti letters or something, and I think it had some skates and a rainbow or something. That's something I don't want to admit to anymore.
Yeah, so how does that conversation go? I'm sure you're a scraggly high schooler,
yeah,
asking this business owner if you can paint permanently on,
yeah,
his structure.
I think I was like 19, and I just brought him a drawing. I had seen that somebody else had painted the other one, and I was like, oh, they're at least open to that idea. And so I just went up there and asked them, and yeah, they let me.
from skate country all the way to true love in the heart of downtown Waco at 4th and Franklin, how would you say that your muralist style as it pertains to the works in Waco that you've done has evolved?
I'm a lot more patient. There's a lot more straight lines. It's better than it was, I would hope. And just different content. Right now it's become like pretty architectural. There's a lot of space involved, shadows and depth and stuff like that that I just wasn't even aware of when I did my first wall here.
So is that stuff that you've picked up in grad school?
Undergrad school, yeah. Yeah.
What's the most important thing for you to remember when painting on a wall?
It's not that big of a deal.
Because it's just the idea that you can always paint over it.
Yeah, you can always paint over it. Because like I feel like if you put too much importance on one thing, then you just kind of like you lose the essence of what you're trying to do because you're worried about that other thing, rather than just being like what do I have, and then you put that on rather than like what do they expect.
What's the mentality shift between painting on a wall and painting on a canvas?
Painting on a wall is a lot more fun. it feels like. I feel like sometimes studio time, not selfish because everybody chooses to do what they want with their own time, but it does. It feels like this kind of like you're in a bubble, and then when you're painting on walls, it's not necessarily about the individual. It's just about the group, because I don't own the wall, and I'm not there to like get a pat on the back about the wall. I'm just like it's done, and it like has its own life beyond me.
And oftentimes it's you approaching the business owner and saying, hey, I'm an artist. Find me on Instagram. You can see what I do. Would you let me come and paint on your wall? And it's not always them. Hey, Mick, let us come and pay you X amount to come bring your beautiful art to our space. Right. It's you looking for a canvas and them offering that up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is like a balance between the two now that I've like painted quite a bit. Yeah.
A balance between you simply just giving
me
away
approaching
things?
And them approaching, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because in Albuquerque, I had two pretty good painting projects that I did, and I was approached on both that were ended up being great.
That brings up an interesting conversation regarding commercialism in art. Mm-hmm. And before we went to air, you and I were talking about how last year the artist Kaws, K-A-W-S, had a retrospective at the Fort Worth Modern.
Yeah.
And Kaws became famous in the late 90s when he would graffiti in New York City. There'd be a Calvin Klein ad on the subway, and he would draw a big alien creature on top of this beautiful model's face. And it got to the point where Calvin Klein started noticing, hey, all of our ads are being altered by this artist. Let's hire that artist, make it seem as if it's us who's working in collaboration with him, and sort of harness that creative energy that's different from what our creative team brought that he has now. And what are your thoughts on Kaws specifically, but really commercialism in art and how that enters into your mind frame?
I like Kaws. I liked his graffiti probably better than I like his, maybe like gallery work or like fine art. I'm glad that like you said, that they showed his like previous work of like where it came from and where he came from. Mm-hmm. Because I saw a retrospect, I think it was the first one they had for him, and there wasn't much of that. It was more like, this is who I am now rather than this is where I came from. And I appreciate the where he came from a lot more than this is where I'm at now sort of thing. I guess commercialism and art, or art and commercialism and art. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I think at this day and age, we do have to like enter into that to be able to survive. But you do have to like retain... Like, you can fit a certain agenda because of a company, but also you have to preserve, like, the essence of your work. You know, you got to protect it. You know, you can, like, give and like, lend certain things, but I think ultimately you have to, like, protect it from being changed by, like, who you're working with.
And how do you make sure that you aren't being diluted by the commercial side and that you are staying true to your vision?
Just being stubborn and not making money the goal of all this. Yeah. Because, like, it, yeah, I don't know. I feel like with companies I've worked for, like, money becomes a weird thing. Like, it's just not, yeah, it's just not real after a certain point for them. And so just protecting it and being like, well, like, yeah, just protecting what you have and not letting it get affected by, like, your needs.
Well, that's the crux for all artists.
Yeah.
Is at what point do I stop suppressing my needs to eat mm-hmm. and really focus on the fact that, hey, if I'm not eating, I'm not going to be able to write this beautiful manuscript. I'm not going to be able to get up on a ladder for 6 hours a day and put this paint up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's definitely a give and take to it all. Yeah, I was with somebody in Denton, and I remember, like, I was painting a bunch of walls, and I felt like I was doing good, and she, like, sat me down one day, and she's like, this is changing you. Like, the public's expectation from your work is making your work bad right now.
Wow.
And I took it so serious, and I always think about that. And I did. I had to, like, check myself and be like, they want, like, Mick Burson style, and I'm stuck because I know what they expect, and I'm just delivering that rather than kind of, like, growing and expanding. That was, like, a big wake-up moment. I was like, man, like, it was crazy.
Flattering in one sense, because you do have an identifiable style that people want, mm-hmm. but at the same time, if you continue in that same style, you aren't progressing.
Right, yeah. And I think that was, like, a big reason to move out of Denton. Just I painted a bunch in that town, and I didn't want to overdo it, or then be like, oh, okay, like, this kid's done enough up here, you know? I want to, like, leave on a good note.
I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com. You're hearing from Mick Burson, working artist here on Downtown Depot. What is the best way that people can support artists like yourself? Is it buying original work? Is it going to shows? Is it following you on Instagram?
Yeah, I think everybody does it in their own way. I'm all about buying people's work if I really like it. Like, I collect work. But also at the same time, like, I do make paintings all the time, but I don't have them, like, for sale necessarily. Like, you can't go to my website and buy a painting.
And why is that? Downtown Depot listeners want to shower you with cash.
Somebody asked you that the other day. I don't, it's just not the time yet. Yeah. And, like, I'll have shows and I'll sell work at shows, but I feel like the online marketplace of selling paintings is kind of weird. I work with a gallery, and you can, like, contact them, and they'll definitely get you set up with, like, a list and stuff and a price for my work.
Well, Mick does have a couple shows coming up in Dallas in February at Craighead Green in the Design District, and in New York City in March at the Art on Paper Fair.
Yeah.
What are you expecting for your work this upcoming semester?
Well, let me just specify real quick. So the Craighead Green show, it's a collaboration between me and Russ Connell, and it's a 3-person show. And so he built these sculptures, and there's 10 small ones, and then there's 3, like, small being, like, about 12 inches high. And then there's 3 ones that are about 7 feet high. So he made the structures, and then I just painted them.
Cool.
Yeah. So I can't take credit for that show. Like, I am part of that show, though, for sure. And then Art on Paper, I'm showing drawings with Richard Levy Gallery in New York.
And what's the gallery that you were represented by?
Richard Levy.
It's Richard Levy, yeah. Okay. And are they based in Albuquerque?
Yeah, they're based in Albuquerque.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Mick, what inspires you?
I think, like, being human is pretty exciting. And just, like, figuring out, like, who you are from, like, all different things, like, what you see, what you hear, social conditioning, like, everything, like, who am I right now and what have I become? I think that's exciting to try to pick apart, because I feel like with that, like, you can put vulnerability in places, and I really enjoy vulnerability in work and in people and like, just being like, I am human and this is, you know? I think that's exciting. I like that, I like not taking everything too serious. I don't know. Yeah.
Your work, to me, when I see it, I see a lot of primary colors and a lot of geometry.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that is, it doesn't look complex when you're looking at it far away, and then you get up and you can realize all the different dimensions of it.
Yeah.
That to me sort of signals an artist who is willing to work with the basics and then make the basics even more complex. Sort of like you're watching a fractal, mm-hmm. and this image just turns into smaller and smaller versions of the same image as it expands.
Yeah.
How would you characterize your style right now?
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that yesterday when I was painting that wall. Like, I feel like it has. I've kind of pared things down and become more and more minimal. Because sometimes it seems that if things are like over decorated, it's from like a lack of knowledge or confidence of it. I feel like with drawings a lot, like I've seen with my students, if they don't know what to do, then they just kind of overwork it and overcomplicate it. And I feel like it's harder to just take the basics, break those down, and be like, where does this fit and like where does this go, rather than to like kind of like decorate it, you know?
Well, that's a classic error in writing as well. Mm-hmm. You read someone like Cormac McCarthy or Ernest Hemingway using almost no adjectives, and then you read a freshman literature paper,
yeah.
and it's the beautiful, wonderful exhibit at mm-hmm. the art fair, and you realize that it's about what's not there. It's yeah. not so much about what's there.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I like the idea of being like, what is not there, and or leaving expectations from people, not fulfilling all expectations. And I feel like by paring things down, you can do that.
And that's something that's been learned for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
when you look at your early work, it probably feels a lot noisier than what you're doing today.
Yeah, and I feel like you do. You kind of like go through it all, and then you can like, after going through everything, then you can like begin to pare it down. But you do have to go through it, otherwise it's going to be uninformed when you pare it down.
And when you look at an artist like Picasso and you see his really modern stuff later in his life and you think, oh, my little kid could have drawn that.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you see his work when he was 15 or 16 and he's doing incredible portraiture.
Yeah.
You got to be able to have a foot in both camps.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. I think you do have to learn like all the different styles. And I feel like with different styles in art, I would – if I strongly dislike one of them, I'm going to end up doing it within that year probably. Like I'll end up just like dabbling in it. Because I remember minimalism. Like even growing up, I was like, I will never be an abstract artist. And like I guess my work is considered abstract by people, but it all makes sense to me, so it doesn't seem abstract to me. But I can see how the characteristics in my work do put it in that category. But yeah, I was like, no, abstract work, like, no. And now, like, that minimalism, that, yeah, it's funny because, like, yeah, when I don't like something, then I know I'm going to start doing it.
Well, and the definitions of art they've constantly shifted, but really within the last 100-150 years with deconstruction and just having more materials to work with, I think, has been big. And we've seen so many artists pushing the envelope, which is – you know, what artists are known for.
Mm-hmm.
One artist that you and I both mutually love is a fellow named Swampy,
mm-hmm.
who is an itinerant artist who travels by train. He just sticks his thumb out, hops on a train when the conductor isn't looking. He'll paint walls. And that's just another example of artists in 2018 pushing our conceptions of what we consider quote-unquote fine art.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that photographer, his last name's Brody, and he photographed people on trains. That's so vague.
I can't help you, sorry.
What was his name? Yeah, never mind. Let's skip that.
But so what are your feelings on the way that the definition of art has changed? In terms of like what's publicly acceptable, because maybe 50 years ago people would not have cared about someone like Swampy, or someone would have seen Cause ruining quote unquote a Calvin yeah. Klein ad in the 1950s, and they would have been angry about it.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. Like I'm really glad that the definition has. I feel like it's broadened, and people do like expect and collect different things from art now. There's something you said with Cause, and like it's like somebody would say that he's like destroying something. I think that like there has been this kind of this new fascination with graffiti or street art culture, and people do accept it now, which is great. I think that's exciting too. I really appreciate that they have broadened the view of what it can be.
And is that thanks to Banksy and Exits Through the Gift Shop, or are there other things to which you would attribute that?
You know, I like, as much as I don't want to give credit, it probably is due to Exits Through the Gift Shop. I'm sure that's a big one, because that made it like very mainstream. It gave the public a view into that world.
Take me to Waco. When you think about this city as a working artist, what about Waco in general and downtown specifically makes this a spot that is good for artists like yourself?
I don't know. Like coming back, it's totally different here. Like, I do. I feel like if I were to ever move back, I could totally make a living here just doing what I want to do with my art. And that's really exciting. And there is like a huge influx of people coming into the city. And so there's money and opportunities, and it's different than when I was younger, and it's awesome. I'm excited for everybody here.
And the structure in downtown Waco, having a lot of these old buildings with big walls,
mm-hmm.
you ride around 4th Street and Austin Avenue and Washington, and you see canvas.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that there are some murals in town, but there's not a ton. And I think there is like space for that here, which is exciting. They should do a mural festival here. Just putting that out there if anybody wants to make that happen.
So how do you envision that working?
When towns do it, they bring in probably like, I did one in Albuquerque not too long ago. It was a 508 mural festival. And they secured, I think, 20 different locations. And so there's 20 different artists, and we all got a wall. And it was sponsored by different people in the city. And they made a book out of it. They put plaques on the wall. Richard Levy sponsored my wall. Thank you to them for that. And it brings like this awareness to the city of public art. And then they do tours afterwards. It's always a great time.
Well, Creative Waco, I hope you're listening. Yeah. Mural Fest, let's have it here in Waco. Mick Burson can be found online at mickburson.com. Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thank you.
It's 2018, and we've all become pretty good at multitasking. So while you're there listening to me blather on about small business, pull out your phone and search for Waco Business News on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. In addition to newsworthy updates in between episodes, followers on social media will also get a ton of bonus features, like videos from the interviews you hear here on KWBU. Last week, I put out a couple clips of Chris Collins from the Greater Waco Chamber. One of her talking about the role of economic development for growing cities, and another on creating jobs in Central Texas. If you want to squeeze the most out of your listening experience and learn as much as you can about what's happening in our town, make it a viewing experience as well. Follow Waco Business News on social media for highlights from the weekly interview. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.